our generation has become, our BS meters are really high. Like, we know when people are like too polished or too clean, or like, okay, you didn't write this, somebody wrote this for you, right? Like, that kind of thing. And we want the authenticity. We want that person. We, as much as we want what they have to offer, we want the person even more.
Welcome to the Brands That Book Show, where we help creative businesses find more clients and build their brands. I'm your host, Davey Jones. Today's guest is Tyler Harrington. Tyler is a videographer based in Richmond, Virginia, and along with his wife, Ashley, they specialize in wedding and brand films. And he's also become a go-to resource for tech-related advice and recommendations. Today, we're discussing how to incorporate video into a brand. Be sure to also check out Ty's Tech Line, a podcast that Tyler hosts about the impact of technology on our everyday lives. So we're going to spend this interview, we're going to be talking about how you can effectively use video to enhance or promote your brand. So I'm excited to dig into that with you because of just how important video has become. I know that some of my listeners know this, but you were actually the person that helped me initially get this podcast set up. And one of the reasons that I went to you for podcast help is because you are, well, you're Ty's Tech Line, right?
So That's right.
You help us make a lot of our technology decisions. And I know that there's a lot of people in the industry, you know, Caitlin James being one of them, that you also help with all you know, their technical needs. Your podcast setup far surpasses my, I think what you're using the same mic that like Michael Jackson used to record his album.
That's right. You used this mic, the Shure SM7B, to record the entire Thriller album.
So yeah,
not this exact mic, but this, this brand and this, this model of microphone. So.
And so yes, now all of a sudden,
it's a gift and a curse, Davey.
I was perfectly happy with my mic, and now all of a sudden I'm experiencing all this brand or this mic envy.
Anyways,
enough about that. We want to dig into talking about video and how you can utilize video in your brand. But first, as we do with everybody, I want to hear about how you got started in video. Was this something that you studied in school? How'd you become a videographer?
Yeah, so it's funny. I actually have a very, I'd say, kind of abnormal path into the world of video because I actually started in the world of photography, which is becoming something that less and less people know about us, which I think is kind of funny. But I started doing photography when I was in high school. You know, I took photography classes all through high school. I was on the yearbook for a little bit doing in my senior year as a yearbook photographer, stuff like that. So I always was super, super into photography. And when I got ready to go to college, you know, I didn't really excel in any subjects in school. I was a very straight B student, so I was just very average at everything. I wasn't very passionate about any subject except for really photography. So when I got to college, I decided to give photojournalism a try. Long story short, it didn't really pan out. Ended up switching over to graphic design. Actually ended up graduating with a graphic design degree, but took a bunch of photography classes as part of the art school, as part of the art degree. So I was doing photography all through college, and like a lot of people, I had a friend who was getting married, you know, and they're like, hey, I can't afford a professional photographer. I know that you have a DSLR. Can you shoot my wedding? You know, the kind of the standard story that I feel like a lot of people have when they get started in the photography world or whatever. So I said, sure. I researched the heck out of it like I do with everything else in my life. And I just put a lot of time and effort into that. I ended up actually buying a 60D to go, you know, to shoot that wedding, you know, upgraded some gear, got a 50mm, a Nifty 50, all that sort of stuff. Like my tech researching brain background kind of goes back all the way to that. Anyway, shot this one wedding and it was just a perfect storm. I was the perfect age. I had a lot of friends who were older than me who were graduating, a lot of friends just in my circle that were all graduating and getting married and all that sort of stuff. So from there, it just sort of stemmed and kind of grew as far as photography goes. As far as video goes, I've actually never taken a formal video class of any kind. I don't have any formal video training. Everything that I know about video, I learned online. But the way I got into that was I had a same kind of thing in college. A friend was like, hey, can you DJ my wedding, aka like set up this sound system and just run a playlist, you know, off of an iPod, and I had just got this brand new Canon 60D that shot video. So I went to the rehearsal dinner to set up all the sound system, and while I was there, I just shot a couple clips, kind of was just like messing around. I'd never done video before on a DSLR or anything like that, and I went home that night, kind of threw those babies in iMovie, slapped some explosions in the sky on that sucker, threw it up on Facebook just as kind of like a for the bride and groom, just sort of for fun. I didn't think anything of it. And somebody's mom from back home actually saw it, reached out to me and was like, hey, my daughter's getting married next summer. So this was maybe like, by the time she reached out to me, it was maybe like 8 months later, this wedding, would you be interested in filming it? I was like, well, I photograph weddings. I've never filmed any weddings. I was like, but it's fine. Like at that point, I started to accumulate some gear for photography stuff. So I said, sure. So again, spent 8 months just researching and learning everything I could about video. Showed up for this wedding, did the best job that I could. It ended up being pretty good. I mean, all things considered for like your first wedding. Looking back at it now, there's a lot of things obviously that aren't perfect. But it is all things considered. Because I had that photography background and I was able to understand, you know, exposure triangle and all that stuff, video came very naturally to me. That ended up being pretty good. And then it just sort of went.
Yeah.
Went from there. So then I started doing half photo, half video from then on until last year.
And I think that story resonates with so many people who get started in really anything that they do. You know, they start out studying something in college and it leads to, you know, a hobby leads to something else and so on and so forth. But even, you know, one thing that I've been talking about with people a lot recently is that they're, you know, people's background, there's almost nothing wasted about it. Like your graphic design degree, for instance, how grateful are you for that graphic design degree within what you're doing right now?
See, it's funny because it sort of seems silly because obviously I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not necessarily making money off of graphic design. But I think that graphic design taught me a lot about problem solving and how to the creative process and how to think through things. So there was a lot of advantages to that. And we could do a whole podcast on, you know, is college good? Should you go to college? Yes or no? Like all those types of things. But there's so many things I learned in college that weren't book things that weren't necessarily things I learned in classes, but just learning how to operate and run a business and build connections and make relationships and manage your time. Like there's lots of things that you get from college beyond just like academics and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I mean, I use the graphic design degree for a lot of things when it comes to, you know, understanding type and color theory and how to use Photoshop. And there's lots of advantages to having the design degree, even if I'm not necessarily directly using it.
Oh yeah. I mean, you can create so much collateral on your own, but I think that there's just, it seems that there's no wasted space in anybody's past. And that certainly seems to be true of you. So eventually Ash decided to join you, in this business.
Yeah, so when we got married in June 2013, and I had already been doing the business for almost a year, you know, kind of like officially, and I had a number of weddings under my belt, and I had, I think, maybe 10 for that summer after we got married booked. And the first one, right after we got married, was actually in the Bahamas. So Ash was like, well, you can't go to the Bahamas without me. We've been married for, you know, 5 weeks. You're not leaving me to go out of the country to the Bahamas by yourself. So I said, all right, fine. So if you want to come, you might as well shoot, right? She had a little bit of a background in photography. Nothing, like not really as many classes or anything like that, but she had a DSLR and she had some experience. So I was like, if you're going to come, you might as well, you know, pick up a camera and shoot.
Might as well help.
Yeah. It was like, at that point,
you got to pay your way through this, through this workation.
Earn this trip to the Bahamas. So at that point, we sort of started realizing that Ash had certain skill sets when it came to interacting with the family, interacting with the bride and groom, things like that on the wedding day that were really beneficial. And then, of course, it's always good to have a second camera, a second shooter, a second angle for certain things throughout the day. So that was when we kind of started realizing, hey, this is something we should consider doing together. Because up until that point, we had never really talked about it. For whatever reason, it was always just sort of this thing that I did on the side to save money for an engagement ring. And it was kind of becoming and just growing bigger than I ever anticipated. And we never talked about it. But I realized that I was trying to emulate like Caitlyn James. You know, I was trying to blog like Caitlyn James as this like 22-year-old dude. And it was just so outside of what was natural for me and so outside of my, like, the real me that it was coming across very disingenuous, and it just wasn't really working. But Ash, that was very genuine for her. You know, we had just gotten married. She was recently a bride. She could connect with people. She brought a whole nother skill set to the table. And we were both busy at the time. Anyway, I mean, I was working full time. She was going to grad school. It was a whole bunch of stuff. So being able to split some of the load with emails and stuff like that just seemed like it made perfect sense. So that's when we kind of joined forces and have been doing it together ever since. And for 4 years, we did half of our weddings every year, more or less, were photo, half our weddings every year were video, up until last year. And last year, we finally made the official switch where we dropped photography, we stopped offering that as a service, and we moved into just doing video. And along the way, we've also started incorporating a lot more of other types of video work into our business as well, that we're able to kind of compensate for not having photography and stuff like that. So we do a lot of promo films for creatives, we help with a lot of educational materials for creatives, creating courses, things like that. And then for ourselves as well, you know, I started a YouTube channel doing education for other filmmakers. You know, we've done webinars and we have a couple courses of our own. So we kind of have shifted from this sort of just hybrid photo video team into just doing video, but also adding in that other element as well.
And that's really what I want to spend a lot of time talking about today, is the kind of video work that you do for other businesses and how that benefits and impacts their business. But first, just a little insight into why you decided to make the switch from photo and video to just video, and maybe the impact that that has on your business. And I know we have a little bit of insight into that because we helped with that with your web redesign when you decided to go. Well, actually, way back in the day, too, Krista did your website, but then also when you decided to go just to videography as well. So what went into that decision?
It was a tough decision, I'll be really honest with you, because, like I said, I started doing photography back in high school, and it kind of became part of my identity. So for me to just completely drop photography, which from a like personal, I don't know if ego is the right word, but from just like a personal identity standpoint, that was really hard for me, because like I'm Tyler Harrington, I'm a photographer. Like that was just kind of who I was, sure. You know? And I was like, I'm a photographer, you know? And it started becoming, we started slowly easing into it, but that was a big part of it. And also, you know, half of our weddings every year, half of our income was from photography. And the idea of kind of dropping that for a long time really, really scared me. But what ultimately kind of like pushed us over the edge was we just knew we needed to specialize. And we heard a lot of different people talk about niching down and specialization and things like that. And we started to like just get honest with ourselves and say, we like photography and I like the technical side of photography, but there's a lot of parts of photography that we don't really like. And we honestly don't think we stand out that much. Like, we're not bad at photography, but we're not so great that we're standing out. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the video world, there's a lot less competition as far as wedding filmmakers just in our area. It's just fact. And we feel like we enjoy it a lot more. And it's something I feel like that we kind of stand out and sort of excel at, as opposed to we're just, you know, good enough. So it's kind of all these sort of factors and enough people kind of, you know, whispering in our ear over time that kind of eventually persuaded us to do it. And It was rough at first. It was just a rough booking season that first year, that first off season after we made the switch. We probably just didn't time it quite as well as we could have and didn't go about it in maybe the best way possible. But looking back at it now, and now that we're, you know, a year and a half into it or whatever, it definitely was one of the best things that we could have done. It's just allowed us to really focus in on video, allowed us to really focus in on being the best at one specific thing. And even, from a gear perspective, it's so much easier because we can focus all our investments on that. There's a lot of good things that came from it, but those are kind of like the main process of how it ended up happening.
And do you feel like your video work excelled that much more after you decided just to focus on videography?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that, I think that it allowed us to really hone in, find our style, really kind of niche down on this. That was the only thing we had to focus on. And I mean, our goal always, and no matter anything we do, is to continue to get better and grow, you know, year after year and film after film, and always trying to constantly be getting better. But I think that by just doing video, it allowed us to accelerate that growth process because it was the only thing we had to focus on.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what you found over the course of at least the last year, and maybe it's been longer than that, is that there's been more of a demand for video work from other businesses. Why do you think that's the case? Why do you think all of a sudden you have this whole another source of income that maybe you didn't expect as much of at the beginning in terms of video brand work?
Yeah, it's honestly something that we kind of stumbled our way into. And we have to attribute a lot of that to our friend, you mentioned Caitlin James. I have a really funny story with that. I feel like I have to tell it because it's a huge part of our story with Caitlin. And that honestly is really what sparked this whole educational brand filmmaking side of our business is that, so when we first moved to Richmond, Ash and I didn't know anybody. You know, I went to WVU, Ash and George Mason. Richmond was just sort of a place we randomly ended up because of a job that I got. We didn't know anybody. But we met Caitlin. We went to like a photography meetup and met her. And I had read Caitlin's blog for years and years and years. So I always joke that I'm a recovering KJ fangirl, right? and it's funny now because we're like really, really good friends with them. But at the time, it was like a really big deal to meet Caitlin. And I remember when I was working at my 9-to-5 job, I watched a lot of Creative Live. And I was watching Creative Live and some guy was talking about, he's like, if you want to make opportunities for yourself, if you want to grow, you need to be just bold and like reach out to people, show them the value that you can offer them. And don't just like say, I want to pick your brain or like what you can get from them, but like what you can offer to them. So I spent probably 2 or 3 hours like crafting this email to Caitlin. And I was like, all right, it's got to be perfect. I don't want to be too like fangirly, but I also want to show like that I want to help work with her and I would love to help them out or whatever. So I wrote this whole email to Caitlin basically saying like, hey, I think that video content is really, really important. I've been following your blog for years and years and years. And she did two like video blog posts over the course of the time I was following her. And I remember watching those and feeling like it was like a whole new level in which I knew her because I got to hear her voice, see her talk and all this stuff. And after reading, you know, her blog for all this time, I finally felt like I connected with her through those videos, just in a different way, just being able to hear her voice and her accent, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really powerful. And I knew that if it was powerful for me, that it would be super powerful for the rest of her audience and for everybody else. So I sent her this email kind of explaining that whole thing. And then I was like, if you ever are interested in getting back into video stuff, or if you have any video projects you need to be working on, you know, we live in Richmond and we'd love to, you know, help in any way we could. So I sent her this email and I was like kind of nervous. I felt like I was being a little, you know, forward maybe, you know, by reaching out to Caitlin James about, you know, trying to help her or whatever. And she didn't respond for like 2 weeks. So I was like freaking out for 2 weeks. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I ruined this, any chance of ever like being friends with them. Like I just came off as weird or whatever, but she's just busy and gets a lot of emails. So she emails me back 2 weeks later and is like, hey, yeah, we're actually, we're speaking at WPPI. We need like a intro video, blah, 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 whatever. So went over to their house, shot this video, and that was kind of how it started. And then it kind of snowballed from there. But that concept of video being like adding this extra level, this extra connection point that people can really latch onto and connect with, I think is something that Caitlin recognized really early. And we were able to do a lot of really great stuff together, her and I. And then I think I'm not saying because of Caitlin, but it's also since then it's really exploded. And I think that people are starting to see that more and more and more. So I think that that's a really just great story that kind of exemplifies why video is really important and also how we got into it.
One thing that I realized is that I've heard you tell that story a number of times now, and I've never heard it from Caitlin. So Caitlin's going to be on here at some point, and I'm going to ask her about her side of the story because I can't wait to hear about it. But anyway,
ask her about how I named Boca on Twitter. You can also ask her about that.
I remember Michael telling me about that. But yes, just to clear that up, it was actually Tyler that came up with Boca's name. So
subconsciously or whatever it was, I'm just saying I tweeted it to her like 7 years ago.
And I think you have visual proof of it, right?
Like
you
I
have
do. That I record. Kept my time. Yeah.
But anyways, moving back to video. And this was, what year was that when you did that for Caitlin?
Ooh, 2013, 2014. It was pretty soon after we moved here.
And so I would say that that's before video has become as prevalent as it is today with Instagram stories. And of course, originating, we give Instagram stories all the credit, but really it's Snapchat, right?
RIP Snapchat, RIP.
Yep. And so now, Facebook stories, but video is just one of the ways that or something that you have to deal with as a business owner. But it is an incredibly effective way to market and communicate with people and build a brand. And if you advertise on Facebook, generally Facebook videos do a little bit better or perform a little bit better. One, because Facebook wants to prioritize video, so they're more likely to get in front of people. So how should people go about creating videos for their brand? One, do you think it's necessary?
Yeah, I definitely think. I think that using video as a key part of your like marketing strategy, especially in service-based businesses, right, which is like the primary focus of like this podcast and just sort of in general, I think that there's so much value to using video. And I think that, like you talked about, there's a couple of different camps that it can fall into. There's certain things that I think that video just in general is just a good thing that you need to have worked into your marketing strategy in some way, shape, or form. Now, there's the content that you can create yourself, like you talked about with, you know, things like Facebook Live, Instagram Stories, Instagram Live, those types of things that allow your personality to come through in a very genuine and authentic way. And there's also areas where, like with Caitlin, with courses and maybe promo films and things like that, where having someone, it's worth the investment to invest in a proper, quote unquote, like proper promo film, or have someone professionally make you some type of video. But yeah, I think that everybody should be using video in some shape or form within their marketing strategy, as, again, especially for service-based businesses, because you're really selling yourself and you're selling your personality and you're selling what you have to offer them. And that can just shine through so much more quickly in video and on such a deeper level than it can just through images or words or anything else.
Yeah. And I think it's becoming more and more apparent that that's just the, I mean, it's just kind of the medium of the future, right? It's the medium that people prefer to consume. So even if you don't want to use it now, sure, you can get by without using any video in your marketing right now. But I think as time goes on, it's going to become more and more important. And I always say this, that I don't feel super comfortable on video, you know, especially on something like Insta Stories. And I've just forced myself to do it, you know. And at the end of the day, I think that's one of the best ways that you can become better at something and become more comfortable with something. It's just forcing yourself to do it. But what I want to talk to you about is, so if somebody wants to start utilizing video in their business, what first steps do you recommend them taking? Should they start with something like a promo film? And what are the benefits of that?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think that there's benefits to both. I think that something like Insta Stories, honestly, is kind of like the easiest place to just start. Because like you said, being comfortable in front of a camera is not easy. And I think that's people's biggest hindrance to doing more video. I think people generally understand that video is important and kind of the reasons why they should be using it. You know, like I talked about, people being able to see your voice and see you speaking and hear your voice and hear your tone and hear your inflection. There's a lot of power to that. I mean, we kind of take it for granted, I think, in our like very like digital world, especially people our generation who grew up with like texting and AIM and all these sort of mediums, which I think obviously there's power to that. And right off, I guess I just kind of like side note preface, I don't think there's anything wrong with like written word or photos or blog posts. There's nothing wrong with those things. I think that you can't write those off completely. But I think that if you're not using video, you're missing out on a big, not only from like an SEO exposure standpoint, but you're also missing out again on this like extra level of connection. But if you're just getting started and you want to say like, how can I start incorporating video into my brand? I think Insta Stories is a great place to start because it's sort of like a good testing ground because it goes away after 24 hours, right? It's not this permanent thing. It kind of allows you to experiment. It sort of allows you to kind of just get your, find your voice and find your style. Because if this thing I love about Insta Stories is that different people, lots of different people have very different styles when it comes to Instagram stories and how they use them and how they use them based on their personality. And I think you can actually, this would be like a really interesting like social experiment, like how your personality relates to how you do something like Instagram stories, right? And how what that correlation might be. But I think that it allows you to just get in front of the camera, like you said, get like reps. It's kind of like when you gotta just get your reps in. If you go back on my YouTube channel, Davey, and you look at some of the older videos from like even like last year, like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they're pretty rough. Like some of them are really bad. And the only way to get better at speaking and talking to a camera is just to do it over and over and over again.
And that's, I think anybody would say that of any work they create. I know Caitlin says that of her work. I've heard Jasmine Starr say that of her work. But anybody's going to say that. I mean, if everybody's work looks exactly the same as it did the very first time they picked up a camera or the very first time they started doing what they're doing, that's not a good thing. You know, it means that they haven't progressed. But the great thing about Insta Stories that I want to mention, and people already know this, of course, is that the videos go away. So you can go on there, and even if you feel like you've made a fool out of yourself, you've only made a fool out of yourself for 24 hours, and the chances, and people aren't going to remember that, right? And the fraction of people who see that, it's always, I feel like a lot less people are watching than you know, what we think, especially when we're nervous about something, you know? So I would agree that something like Insta Stories is a great place to start. And that's really how I've become more comfortable with videos, just forcing myself, you know, at least a couple times a week to get on Insta Stories and not just post like graphics or something like that, but post, you know, a picture of me, you know, speaking at the camera, no matter how much it hurts.
Right. Yeah, and I think that there's a ton of value in that because it really builds this trust with your audience and it kind of builds this level of authenticity, especially if it's not perfect, right? I think that if it's too perfect, people have a hard time relating with that. And I think that especially in service-based businesses, ultimately people are trusting you to perform some sort of a task, to perform some sort of a service for them. And there's this big interaction of transaction of trust, right? They're trusting you that you can do whatever it is that you say you're going to do, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, there's some tangible things that you can kind of show them. But at the end of the day, there's a big level of trust there. And I think that having that authenticity and sort of breaking down the veil of these like perfectly crafted websites and the perfect rewritten copy and the perfect Instagram post and the perfect feed, like all these things, I think Insta Stories give you that chance to show them the real you, the behind the scenes, show them that I'm a real person. This is a real business. This is, what I do. This is the work that goes into it. Like there's so many opportunities for Instagram stories to be really powerful as far as marketing goes without feeling like you're marketing people.
And that's
one thing that people, again, our generation has become, our BS meters are really high. Like we know when people are like too polished or too clean or like, okay, you didn't write this. Somebody wrote this for you, right? Like that kind of thing. And we want the authenticity. We want that person. We, as much as we want what they have to offer, we want the person even more.
So taking one step further than that, YouTube is another great resource. Whether you use, and it's not so much, I think, whether you use YouTube or Vimeo or another video platform. The great thing about YouTube, I will say, is that YouTube videos probably have a higher chance of ranking and showing up in a Google search result than some 100%. Of these other video platforms. So that's one of the biggest reasons that we use YouTube. And it's versatile. I mean, it can do whatever you want it to do, and you can hide videos and make them private and all of that on YouTube as well. So somebody who wants to start utilizing YouTube, maybe taking it a step up, right, from something like Instagram stories that disappears in 60 seconds and go to something like YouTube, where you can always take the video down, but it lives a little bit longer. It's generally created for a specific reason, either to teach something or to show how to do something. Where would you recommend people starting there? I mean, do they really just need an iPhone or a smartphone to do that? Or do you recommend certain gear?
Yeah, I mean, what I say, especially with YouTube, is that content is the most important thing. Like what you're saying, how you're saying it, the content that you're actually getting across is way more important. People can forgive bad video. People can forgive if the quality is not 100%. Like I think people get so focused on it having to look so cinematic or so beautiful or so this or so that or 4K or whatever that they lose sight of what's really important. I mean, there's plenty of videos on YouTube that have millions of views that were shot with like a webcam like this and somebody just talking to a camera, right? So I would say don't get held up on the tech. And we can talk about that in just a minute, like the different, some things that you can do to maybe take it to the next level. But I think you can definitely have a successful YouTube channel and even a great YouTube channel with an iPhone, with honestly any camera that you can get your hands on today is going to be good enough quality wise for YouTube. And as far as content that you're creating, I think honestly, again, if you're thinking about it in terms of, YouTube is the second largest search engine on the internet behind Google, right?
And it's owned by Google.
Yeah. Right? So essentially it's almost the same thing. So like I said, there's huge opportunity for discovery on YouTube. But I would say if you have a blog that you've had for years, you could pick almost any blog topic that you have done and you can turn that into a YouTube video, right? With a little bit of planning, a little bit of sort of strategy and how you want to convey this information, especially for somebody like us who's in a very visually dominated industry, the things that we do are very visual. It's hard to write a blog post for you, Davey, about like how to go into the back end and change something and show it. Absolutely. Or whatever, right? You can write it in a blog post, you can do screenshots, there's ways that you can do it, but being able to show it on video, there's so much power to that. So I think that if you just start thinking in that way, thinking about how you can utilize video, you'll start to come up with a bunch of really great ideas for how you can start incorporating that into a YouTube channel. And even if all you're doing is essentially just talking through your main points of your blog post, there's still huge value to that because, again, it's your personality. You're putting your face out there. You're building that extra level of trust. Even if the information is very similar, it's just another way for it to be discovered. And then you start combining that with a written blog post and with the power of the SEO from the written word and all the advantages we talked about in video, now you're starting to really have this like dynamic creation that you're starting to really be able to push out there and really starting to get even more exposure and even more of a connection.
And I know for us, I have a video on how to use Showit's SEO settings. And that video is also embedded into a blog post where I've written out essentially what I've shown in video. And both of those things, at least last time I checked, show up on the first page of the Google search results when mm-hmm. you search for Showit SEO settings or Showit SEO. And so some people might just see the video and prefer to actually be walked through it. And other people might prefer looking at what's basically the transcript of the video, but walking right. through the written word and doing it as they read. So I think there's definitely greater visibility when you can include both video formats and written formats, or, you know, as we're going to talk about in another episode, podcasting as well. What about when it comes to editing? Like, do you need, you know, even when you shoot with a video, what would you edit that video on?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, most people, I just assume this, I don't know why. Most people are probably on a Mac who are listening to this.
At least in the creative industry, that seems to be the case. Right. A lot of people have Macs.
Yeah, so I mean, iMovie, honestly, is a great way to do it. You can do it iMovie on your phone mm-hmm. and you can post it. I mean, honestly, just getting it out there. And like, again, the whole thing is that, yes, there's a slight, I think, barrier to entry when it comes to video as far as like, you do have to do the editing. Not talking about Insta stories or whatever, but like for YouTube and things like that. You have to do the editing or whatever. But if you're willing to put in that work that other people aren't, that is what gives you that ability to show up. Mm-hmm. And with YouTube, there are tons and tons of videos that are out there, but there's a good chance that if you Google, like I just did this yesterday, I Googled wedding stationery, Virginia, and I looked it up on YouTube, and I looked it up on Google. And on YouTube, it showed up with like 315 results, and they're all, you know, like actual people who were had videos about stationery that somehow whatever they did to get them tagged as Virginia, whatever showed up. Sure. I searched the same thing on Google and it was over a million results that showed up. I had to go through, I had to scroll up like an entire page and a half to get over the ads, the map, the places where you can go shop stationery, like all these different things. And then on that whole first page, there were two people that were actually like humans, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else was like The Knot and Wedding Wire and, you know, Michaels and Yelp or whatever, you know? Sure. So you can get on that top page of Google, and that's obviously the power to that. And Davey obviously knows a lot more about SEO than I do, but there's a lot of work that goes into that, and it takes a long time. There's no like instant way to do that. Mm-hmm. But if you made one YouTube video that was very strategically tagged and directed towards people searching for whatever it is that however you're trying to reach them, if you can reverse engineer that and you start thinking of the ideas first and what your ideal client is going to be searching for on YouTube, and you can create a video that speaks directly to that, if you get into the YouTube algorithm, the reach of those videos can have is just insane, right? When I first got onto YouTube, I made a video about a camera that I had bought or whatever, and I didn't think anything. I think I had like 500 subscribers on YouTube at the time, and that video got like over 80,000 views within a few months because it got into the algorithm, it started getting re-serviced to other people, and it can just pop off like crazy.
And not to mention, so there's less competition because less people are doing video, which is right. a reason why to take advantage of it now. Get in there, you know, take your bumps and bruises now, right. and when it is mass adopted, you'll have already gone through the learning pains of, you know, getting on a new platform. But, you know, all that to mention, too, that those YouTube videos, they can show up in the actual Google search results page, right?
Right.
So you have the added bonus not only showing up within a YouTube search results page, but then also on a Google search results page. So let's say people are, you know, they're listening in and say, okay, video is definitely for me. I've done the iPhone thing, or I want to skip the iPhone thing. I want to put together something that maybe is a little bit more polished. A little bit more meant for consumption on like YouTube. What kind of gear should they start out with? And let's assume that they're not a photographer, because a lot of photographers are going to have a camera that can do video. So that would be the obvious choice for them, because they wouldn't have to spend any more money on additional gear outside of maybe some recommendations you'll make in a second. What about for somebody who doesn't have a camera that does video? Where should they start?
So this is going to actually probably be counterintuitive to what people would probably think, but the first place you want to start when you're buying any gear to do any sort of video stuff is with your audio, because audio is honestly the most important thing. If I click onto a video and like the, if you install the webcam and it may not be like the greatest quality, but if they sound good and I can hear what they're saying or whatever, I'll stick around, especially if what they're saying is good. But if I get on there and it could be crystal clear, 4K, high def, whatever, and you can't understand what they're saying, or it sounds really muffled, or it just sounds like it's peaking or whatever, I'm gone. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I cannot stick around for that. People will be very forgiving of low quality video. They will be very unforgiving for poor quality audio. So the first thing I would say to invest in is some sort of audio that's probably going to be better than the in-camera or on-phone microphone. So a few suggestions for those types of things. If you do have a camera, they have what's called a shotgun microphone. Essentially, it's a little microphone. It goes on top of your camera in where the same place where your flash would go, plugs into the side, and that is just going to greatly increase the quality of your audio. Essentially, what it does is it blocks out audio coming from the sides, and on the back, it kind of focuses the audio more in a forward direction, exactly, and having it pointed towards you. The number one rule when it comes to audio that everyone needs to know, if everyone listening to this walks away with just one thing, this is the one thing I want you to know, is that when it comes to audio, the closer the audio source is to the microphone, the better it's going to sound. And if you can understand that principle and kind of harness it across anything that you're doing, it's always gonna be better. So the problem with a camera, right? You set the camera up, you sit down, you're maybe 5 feet away to sound good, to have a good framing or whatever, depending on what lens you have. The problem is now the audio source, your mouth, is 5 feet away from the microphone, right?
This is why you're always telling me that I need to speak much closer to my mic.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's something Tyler's always telling me. It's just uncomfortable for me. But I'm trying to get better at it.
So right now in this podcast, if you're listening to this, it sounds like I'm right inside of your ear. I think the audio sounds really great. And that's because I'm literally speaking 2 or 3 inches away from this microphone, right? When it comes to video, the same principle applies no matter what. So what I would say about that is, even if you get that shotgun microphone and you put the camera all the way across the room, it's still not going to sound very good. So what you want to do is maybe shoot with a wider lens, depending on, again, what your options are, bringing the camera closer to you, sitting physically closer to the camera. Because if you're 3 feet from the camera, that's going to sound a heck of a lot better than if you're 8 feet from the camera. So
what camera, like what shotgun mic should somebody start with? Like, do you have a recommendation on shotgun?
I'm gonna send you a link, Davey, to put in like the show notes of this, so people can go and they can look, because there's like a bunch of different options. It's all gonna depend really on your budget. So Rode is sort of the king, I think, of when it comes to these shotgun microphones. Sure. So there's the Rode VideoMic Pro, which is gonna be kind of like the most expensive, the most high featured. And then there's the VideoMic Go and the VideoMic Pro. Now those are gonna be, any of those are going to be great. Again, much better than nothing. The Pro has some extra features and some extra things. It's made better for DSLR. So if you're shooting with like a Canon DSLR or something like that, the Pro might be a really good option. If you have something like a Sony mirrorless or some other types of cameras that have better, basically they have better internal audio, they're pushing a louder signal, doesn't really matter all the technical mumbo jumbo. Those ones are also a good option, but either one of those is going to be significantly better than your in-camera microphone. Okay, so that's the first thing. The problem with a shotgun microphone is that some cameras don't have a microphone jack, like the RX100, which is the camera that I mentioned that I suggested that you buy, and like your phone obviously doesn't necessarily have a jack where you can plug in a microphone. So the next best thing, and what I think that would be another great option, and just involves a little bit more work, is something that's called the Rode SmartLav. Essentially what this is, it's a lavalier microphone, which for anybody who's unfamiliar, it's just a microphone that you clip on and you wear. You'll see these if you watch, Jimmy Fallon. He has the little microphone that's clipped onto his jacket. That's a lavalier microphone. What this microphone does, the SmartLav, it's designed for your iPhone. So all you have to do is you buy this SmartLav. I think it's about $65, somewhere around there. And it plugs into your phone and it records directly into your phone with an app. But the beauty of this is that, A, it's pretty cheap, as far as investment goes, as far as audio stuff goes. But the beauty of it is that the distance to your mouth is very, very close. Again, the closer it is to your mouth, the better it's going to sound. So in that case, you're free to put the camera wherever you want. It can be all the way across the room. If you want to shoot with a 70 and 200 and have that nice compression, make yourself look extra thin, right? You can do that because your audio is going to sound the exact same because that mic is right up on you. The only thing that you'd have to do with that is sync it in post.
Yeah.
So the trick for that is all you have to do is clap, right? Whenever you watch Hollywood movies and they put the little clapper board in there and they snap it down, it's not just for visual, that's actually for the audio. Because what you do is you clap, and what you're going to end up with is a spike in your audio. If you look at the waveform, a little peak in your video audio, on your in-camera audio, and in the audio that you recorded onto your phone, all you have to do is when you pull them into your editor, find those two spikes, line them up, and then you mute the audio from the in-camera audio, and you'll have that beautiful, crystal clear audio coming from that microphone that matches up perfectly with your mouth from the video from the camera.
Yeah, so that's probably, you know, so if you're new to video, a lot of that's probably a little bit overwhelming to you. Tyler's just a great resource for going and, you know, so if you need to clarify, if you have a clarifying question.
Send it my way.
Yeah, I'll definitely send them your way. But just to recap there, the Sony RX100 is a, I think, pretty popular vlogging camera that you actually recommended me that I bought. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's cheap. It's about $1,000, right? Yeah. But if you're doing more video, especially if you're doing video on the go, I think that's a great option. I don't remember you recommending this little smartphone lav mic. But it sounds awesome. But again, what Tyler's saying here is if you use that mic, you just have to sync the audio and the video in whatever you're using, whether it be iMovie or Premiere or Final Cut Pro, whatever you're using to edit. And that's why you clap at the beginning, so that you can see that sound wave in both the audio and then also that spike in the video. And so you know where that they line up. Some of the more advanced editing softwares, right, also have a way to, they'll kind of automatically sync it. Right.
Yeah, it does essentially the same thing. It's just analyzing the waveforms and then lining them up based off of that. But it's easier for the computer to do that than for us.
Yeah.
But if you're using iMovie, it won't have that feature. So the clapping is going to be the best way.
Yeah.
And real quickly, I do want to talk about the camera thing. I think you can totally use your phone, especially the way that phones are going as far as quality goes and things like that. Your phone is going to be really great. So I would suggest here's my thesis on buying cameras to do video. There's three kind of camps, and if you want to pick one of these three, I wouldn't try and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So the other, like you talked about, if you already own a DSLR or maybe you have one just, you know, for to take photos of your kids, check and see if it shoots video. You can find a used one, something like a Canon T3i or some of these maybe older models that still shoot video that you can get for a couple $100. You know, like that would be one option, or even like the Sony mirrorless, any of those types of cameras would be a good, you know, option. Again, you're going to be looking at investing over $1,000 in some of these, probably, unless you get an older model. Then there's going to be like the kind of the middle of the ground. If you don't want to deal with like the different lenses and all that sort of stuff, if all that sort of intimidates you, the RX100 is what I consider like a professional point and shoot. That's again around $1,000, so it's not cheap. But it has a fixed lens. It's kind of all in one. It has a flip up screen. It's very portable. It fits right in your pocket. You don't have to worry about the bulk and the size of like the DSLR, right? There's that sort of option. And then anything less than that, honestly, I would just stick with your phone. So like, I wouldn't go to Best Buy and get like a $300 point and shoot that has a video function or whatever. Your phone is going to have better quality. It's going to be easier for you to use, and it's going to save you $300. Spend that $300 on audio stuff or on something else, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's worth it to buy like a cheap video camera or something like that, or even like a GoPro or whatever. It's just not going to be the look and the aesthetic that you want. So I would stick with one of those three: your phone, something like a professional point and shoot RX100, or the DSLR mirrorless sort of camp. Pick one of those three camps and just learn how to use it and focus more on the content.
Yeah, and if you're not a photographer, don't feel like you have to go out and buy professional videography gear to do this. Okay. Like Tyler said, you can make a great video. And I use the Sony RX100. I don't have any special audio that goes with that. And granted, I haven't made as much use of it as I intended to, but I do plan on doing that this year. And I think the important part, and what we want to emphasize here, is just getting out and doing it. Because there's a time and place for something that's really, really well done and more cinematic. And really well done, and what I mean is more cinematic or more professionally put together by, you know, somebody like you, a videographer. And we're going to talk about that here in a second. But that other stuff, like Tyler mentioned earlier in the interview, people don't want necessarily polished all the time, which is why something like Instagram stories and Snapchat stories, why those things are so popular. So you can get on there, keep the focus on the content and focus on offering value. And when you possible, if you can, you know, like Tyler said, that golden rule, make sure that the audio, you know, people can hear you and it makes sense, that, you know, go with that. Now, real quick, before we end here, I want to talk about creating a more professionally done brand video. Are there anything that people should think about? Like, would you say that this is a must-have for a brand, something like a promo film or behind-the-scenes footage that's more professionally done? Would you say this is kind of a nice-to-have maybe after you get started? What do you think?
I think that there's huge value to having professionally created video, but you need to be strategic with it. And I think that picking someone who knows how to do that strategically well. So I think the common thing you see with a lot of like photographer promo films, and if your promo film is like this, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to bash you. Like, I really am not. But like, it's, you know, it's like, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm a photographer. And it shows like you clicking the shutter and it's just like you taking photos, and then it's, you know, like that's the whole thing. But I don't think that that's necessarily utilizing the power of video. Again, we want the whole point of the video, I think, people can go to your website and they're going to read about you and they're going to read about your dog and about whatever, like all the information that you have on there. You want the video to be a way that connects with people on a different level, give them something extra to connect to. So when they walk away from that video, they feel like, A, they know who you are. They feel like that you know like what's unique about you, and they walk away saying like, oh my gosh, like I want that person to perform this service for me. Whatever it is that you do, I want this person to do that for me. And I think that if you do that well in a professionally made video, that it can really just enhance your brand. I think that, again, if you just have a kind of a generic, generic sort of like ho-hum sort of video, that's not going to have as much of an impact. And again, I think
this— just slow your site down.
It all kind of has to go hand in hand together, right? So I think that if you just have a really great video, but you have an awful website, that's not good either. If you have a really great website and it's an awful video, like, that's obviously not going to work out super well. So you kind of figure out like this melding between the two and figure out how they're going to work together. And somebody who knows what they're doing can help you kind of guide you through that. In the same way that Krista does a great job with, obviously Krista can just get on and she can just code people's websites if she wanted to. But what Krista really brings to the table, what you guys bring to the table as a unit, is being able to really help people go beyond just like the surface level stuff, really figure out who they are. And I think the same sort of principles apply to video.
Sure.
And then if you're able to manage to combine, you know, the aesthetic that matches your brand and the professionalism of your brand and this really deep sort of like getting to know you sort of strategy and like having a really good concept behind the video, I think that when you bring those two things together, that's when it really starts to become powerful. Combining that with once they fall in love with you and then they go to your Instagram stories and they get to see the everyday side of you and whatever, there's value to that. So it also has to do with your personal brand. You know, if you have a really high-end, very professional, like black and white, very chic brand, you'd want your video to reflect that. If you have a really fun, bubbly, whatever, you want those two things to kind of match. And having someone professional will help you get to that point.
And one thing that I would say about the advantage of having something professionally done is that footage goes beyond just the actual video you put together. You can make more use of it than just slapping that video up on your website. You can cut out parts of it and throw them on on Instagram, you know, like actually in your feed. You can use it as a background video in different parts of your site, or maybe you have some sort of promotion going on. But you can just take bits and pieces of that and you can use it in different places, you know? So I think it really does go a long way just beyond getting a promotion film, which is great to begin with.
Yeah, and there's something, I'm not, after listening to this podcast, you can't be like, I'm a professional videographer now. Like, I know everything I need to know, right? And that's not the goal. And I think if you think about something like Strength Finders, right, the whole concept behind Strength Finders is that you should focus more on, figure out what your strengths are so you can focus on those things instead of always trying to improve your weaknesses. Yeah. It's more valuable to take yourself from something that you're an 8 at to a 9 than it is to go from something you're a 2 at to a 3 or a 4, right? Sure. Like, focus all your energy on becoming really, really great at the things you're good at. So when it comes to video, yes, I think it's important to let your personality shine through and to use Insta stories and things like that in ways that it can be natural and organic, and just with a little bit of practice you can get better at. But trying to create this like emotional, very connected video that's cinematic, whatever, like you could spend your whole life trying to do that, and it may never end up looking what like
you,
that, right?
Or what you want it to be, and instead you could, you know, you could save yourself probably a bunch of time, the headaches, right, in the pain by just going through a videographer who specializes in something like this.
Right, and especially for something like education, right? So when you make courses and things like that, that's one of those things where, yeah, you could try and do it on your own. And I know people who have tried to do that themselves. But again, you're going to spend so much time and effort and energy trying to learn all these new things and do something that you're not really skilled to do, and you're not, you don't have the equipment or the knowledge or like any of these things to do. And sure, you could maybe figure it out and it would look fine, but if you want it to look exceptional and great and something you can charge a lot of money for, it's well worth it to invest in somebody like us who has done this a bunch of times, knows all the pitfalls, has the right equipment, has all the failed saves, can make sure that we're saving it so you can focus on just creating the best content possible, as opposed to having to also worry about like all the problems that could go wrong with recording and this and that or whatever, especially if you're new to it. So I think that there's still the investment in video from will be worth it no matter what, whether that's a monetary investment or a time investment. I think that everybody should be investing in video in some shape or form.
Yeah, and I think that things are just going to continue to go in that direction even more so than they have today. And like you said also earlier, I love writing. You know, I don't think the written blog post or written I don't think that kind of stuff is going away. Right. And I think that there's still value to writing blog posts and all of that. I also think that video is going to become more and more prevalent even than it is today. And so I think it's well worth it to learn it today so that when it is the norm, and people could argue that it actually is the norm already. But
I mean, it's becoming more and more. It's definitely becoming more and more normal. I mean, that's how I know. Like I said, I learned everything I know about video from other
watching videos.
Posting videos on the internet, right? It's just, it kind of just the way that it goes.
But I think the mediums are still, I mean, sure, Facebook and Instagram have gone that way, and they're looking, they seem like anyways, those platforms are looking for more and more ways to make video more prevalent and video more of the centerpiece of those platforms than they are already.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, Facebook algorithm highly, highly favors video. Yeah. YouTube, again, because it's Google, it's going to pop up in Google, it's pop up on YouTube. Like it has all that sort of stuff. Like I said, if you can get a video trending on YouTube, or you can kind of like get it to be suggested by YouTube, it can just kind of grow and grow and grow. But then, but the thing is that it's not the end all be all, right? Mm-hmm. It needs to all kind of, it's just another arm. It's just another line in the water to bring people in. And then this brings back to you guys, what you guys do, which is why it's so important. It all comes back to your website. It all comes back to all this sort of thing. So, because with Insta stories and with all these different things, the whole idea is you're just trying to grow this connection and get people and keep them invested in you and keep them knowing about you. Helping people discover you so that when they decide that they need your service and they want your service, you're at the top of their mind, and then they instantly can go to your website and connect with you and whatever. But if you build this great connection on YouTube and they go to your website and it doesn't line up with anything that you're doing, right, that's not going to work either. So it's really important that, like, again, your web design, like all these different things all kind of come together. And I think that it's a great supplement to whatever it is that you're already doing.
Absolutely. Well, Tyler, thank you for joining us today. I have a feeling that you're going to be a relatively regular guest. I mean, it already feels like you kind of have been, but just behind the scenes, right? Just because we talk a lot about this. And like I said, Tyler, I think for so many people, you're their go-to tech guy. You know, if they have a question, especially when it comes to different options and they're stuck between a couple cameras or you know, whatever it is, I know for me, I'll send you a text and say, "Hey, listen, I'm stuck between these two things," and then you'll weigh in. And I almost always go with your recommendation. Tyler, though, if you want to follow him, Tyler, where should people follow along?
Head over. It's called Ty's Tech Line. You can find it on iTunes, all those different places. You can listen to Davey's episode. It's on there. We just kind of riff about podcasting in general and his thoughts like going into the whole podcasting thing. I think it was like the day or two before you launched this whole endeavor. So
what's interesting about that is if you listen to that episode, I had recorded a bunch of episodes at that point. Like we had recorded 10 to 12 episodes before we ever launched. So it's interesting looking back even on, you know, when I recorded that episode, I'm reflecting on the interviews I've already done but haven't launched yet.
Without any feedback, without any response, without knowing how it's going to go. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're interested in kind of this entire process, that would be an interesting episode to listen to before the next one where we dive into. And that's
then we'll
really
see how things have changed now that it's been out in the wild and you've been in it and doing it and all that.
I might have to go back and listen to that one just to remember, you know, exactly how I felt going into it. But other than that,
Tyler, find us other places. And Instagram, I'm at Tyler Harrington. You can find my wife, Ashley. She's a huge part of our business. She's at Ashley Harrington on Instagram. We are just theharrington.com. You can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/theharrington. And best place to go, honestly, is go to Instagram and then go to the link in my Instagram bio. And there's links from there to go everywhere else.
Yeah. Yep. And of course, there'll be show notes that are be associated with this, and we'll have links to them and a few resources in there as well. So thank you for joining me, Tyler.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye. Thanks for listening to the Brands That Book podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast on iTunes and leaving a review so that others are more likely to find it. For show notes and other resources, visit davianchrista.com.